spiritual parts of our life with a robust discussion following. So there was some request from some of the persons who took part. They found it meaningful and they wanted more discussion on the topic. So yesterday was Practical Krishna Consciousness 101. This is Practical Krishna Consciousness 102. Because I'm going to take it to somewhat different level or different approach. So rather than just like tips, this is principles that apply to devotional service. One of the questions, it was Sachi Kumar's question about when we have a clear sense of our goal, devotional service to Krishna is our goal, reestablishing our loving relationship with Krishna, what about those lingering material desires that kind of just like permeate our lives or show up suddenly in a big, bold, strong way? What do we do about that stuff? So, this is the topic of spiritualizing the material portion of our life. Or another way of saying, rather than balancing material and spiritual, get spiritual or spiritual. Then it's not a choice of this versus that, it's spiritual or spiritual in proper proportion. So the Sri Brahma Samhita is one place where that is discussed. And it's, if we think we've got some material desire, we're small fries compared to Lord Brahma. His material desire, like Dhruva's material desire, was a big material desire. He wanted to control a place that was greater than his father Uttanapada, greater than his father's father. Who is that? The father of Uttanapada is? And what does Swayambhuva Manu rule? The whole universe. And greater than his father's father's father. Who's that? Lord Brahma. He wanted a kingdom greater than Lord Brahma. What kingdom is there that's greater than Lord Brahma? It's the spiritual world. He wanted to rule such a kingdom. Although he's just a little boy, he didn't even know what that meant, just like, I'll show you. So Lord Brahma, similarly, when we have our auspicious ceremonies, just as we read this morning, the devas, along with Lord Brahma and Lord Shiva, they came to the shore of the Milk Ocean and they offered the Purusha Sukta prayers. So when we come to an auspicious ceremony, we may chant the Purusha Sukta prayers or the Brahma Samhita prayers. The Brahma Samhita prayers represent the mature realization of Lord Brahma in the stage of perfect trance upon the personality of Godhead. And after those verses, Govindam Adi Purusham Tam Aham Bhajami, they end with text 55 and then text 56. Shriyakanta, those verses. So after, that's his realization through verse 56. What comes after 56 is 57. And in verses 57 through 61, Lord Brahma directly addresses the personality of Godhead, just like Sachit Kumar asked last night. A little bit different. He didn't say, now that I have perfect realization, but Brahma had perfect realization, but he also had material desire. Now, how can you have material desire when you have perfect realization? They don't go together. But his desire was to create a universe. And that's material. Supposing somebody else has, you don't want to create a universe, but you want something else in the realm of temporary, the asat. He had that strong desire. He had a strong desire because Lord Vishnu's own Srishti Shakti was embodied or invested in Lord Brahma. So he wanted to create a universe. And he asked the Lord, isn't this going to interfere with my Krishna consciousness? I have all these nice realizations. I went on a nice yatra to the holy dham, and I feel so purified. I went on a japa retreat, and I feel, wow, I'm ready to chant the holy name, but I've got to do all these material duties. Isn't it going to interfere with my Krishna consciousness? And the Lord says, no. Provided that you join those activities with the primary activities of bhakti. Now, I'm paraphrasing. If I were to read the language of Bhakti Siddhanta, we'd have to get out a dictionary. So I'm just paraphrasing. But I'll read the language of texts 60 and 61, but you can read it yourself, have your dictionary by your side, and you can read the purports. Text 60. These preliminary practices of devotion, sadhana bhakti, are conducive to the realization of loving devotion. And that very loving devotion unto he than whom there is no superior, who goes hand in hand with the attainment of exclusive state of the supreme bliss, and it can lead to myself. So you have duties to do, and combine your duties with, or join your duties with, activities of bhakti, hearing and chanting specifically. Abandoning all meritorious performances, like karmakanda, serve me with faith. It's like Sarva dharmam prityaja, mamekam sharanam braja. The realization that you will achieve will correspond to the nature of one's faith. Last night we were speaking about faith, the role of faith in acts of devotion. So Lord Vishnu was speaking on the same point. The people of the world act ceaselessly in pursuance of some ideal. This is still the Lord speaking. It's not purport yet. By meditating on me by means of those deeds, one will obtain devotion characterized by love in the shape of the supreme service. End of verse. There's a very nice, intricate, high-level Bhaktisiddhanta-esque purport, 3 pages long, where he is describing that very message. He speaks about the first paragraph he says, here's the misgiving of Brahma, I have to do worldly deeds, and that may compromise my spiritual life. What should I do? I have to create this universe. It's like, I gotta create a universe. You know, I gotta create a universe. In order to strike at the root of this misgiving, the Supreme Lord says, now this is Bhaktisiddhanta paraphrasing, quote, "This world subsists by the constant performance of certain activities. Fill all these activities with meditation of me. This will destroy the quality that makes those activities appear to act done by you." That's called false ego. "They will then be of the nature of my direct devotional service, bhakti." So they can be as potent, deliver one to the stage of perfection, the material side of life. This, they become spiritualized to the degree that they will deliver as effectively as the direct activities of bhakti, if they're properly joined with activities of bhakti, hearing and chanting. Then, to explain that paraphrase, he goes on, quoting, in other words, this is what the Lord is saying. "Mankind lives by threefold activities, body, mind, and society." Then he lists, the bodily activities are certain list. The mind activity is a certain list, and the society activities is a certain list. So I'm not going to reread the list. And also now, this is Brahma's dilemma. I have these bodily activities, mental activities, and society activities. Dilemma. How do I continue on a spiritual path? How do I balance my spiritual and material propensities? And the Lord's answer is, you don't balance them, you spiritualize them. You make them all spiritual. But then there's sequences very much like in chapter 12 of Bhagavad Gita, Krishna indicates the stage of perfection in devotion. That's mind always fixed upon me, intelligence always engaged in my service. In such a state, you will live in me always without fail. And if you can't do that, follow the regulations of bhakti yoga, you'll develop the desire to attain to me. If you can't do that, can't act following those principles, then try to work for me. And you'll come to the stage of perfection. If you can't work in that consciousness, then be detached from all types of works, the fruits of your work, and try to become situated in the self. If you can't do that, study it. Learn about it by studying again. Cultivate knowledge. Better than that is meditation. Better than that is renunciation of the fruits of work. For by renunciation of the fruits of work, you can be peaceful. In that peaceful state, you can go further on the spiritual path. So, Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati is doing that in the purport also. He's starting out the bottom ladder. So now we're looking out on the horizon of material tendencies called life in this material world. Body, mind, society. Here's what he includes as society. Marrying, practicing reciprocal relation between the king and the subject, practicing brotherhood, attending at sacrificial meetings, offering oblations, digging wells, tanks, etc. for the benefit of the people, maintaining one's relations, practicing hospitality, observing proper civic conduct, showing due respect to others, etc., our various social activities. When these acts are performed for one's selfish enjoyment, they are called karmakanda, which Lord has already said, rejecting that disposition. When the desire for attainment of freedom from activity by knowledge underlies these actions, they are termed gyan yoga or karma yoga. And when these activities are managed to be performed in this way that is conducive to our endeavor for attainment of bhakti, they are called, this is a little editing point from Tamal Krishnamurti, who studied this and did extensive work on it, is gona bhakti yoga. Gona, as in gunas, mixed with the modes of nature, like rajasic and tamasic and sattvic bhakti yoga, mixed with the modes, i.e. the subsidiary devotional practices. But only those activities that are characterized by the principle of pure worship are called bhakti proper. So unmixed and mixed, in short, devotion. Then again he says, my meditation is practiced in every act. When bhakti proper is practiced in due time, while performing the subsidiary devotional activities in one's intercourse with the ungodly people of this world. So you can mix with the world and be with worldly people, but be above the influence of the modes of nature, provided your purpose is to please Krishna, and that pleasing of Krishna is made possible or assisted by the, you say, vidhis of sadhana bhakti. Even the practicing stages of sadhana bhakti, one can be liberated from the conditioning influences. Provided you're, this is an important provision, provided you're contemplating for whom are you doing this, or proportionate to the submission unto Krishna that you have. So that's how to address the balance, one notion of how to address the balance of material and spiritual. You spiritualize the material, like Lord Brahma is instructed by Lord Vishnu, or like Arjuna is instructed by Krishna. Arjuna is seeing all the material reasons, minus Krishna, why he shouldn't, for ethical reasons, he shouldn't be on the battlefield. And Krishna is giving him transcendental reasons why he should continue with his duty and always think of Krishna. And that way be free from the material influence. Then we're spiritualizing. So how can you spiritualize the impelling urges of life? That is, you know, we're embodied in there. We want activity of this body and the mind and social activity. We're social beings. How do we balance? We spiritualize all those activities. So the spiritualizing ingredient or component is the direct devotional practices. So we must put that in our life, and that doesn't just only create a balance, it spiritualizes everything. Must. So, that's, again, refer to three verses. That was one. If you want to look it up later, it's text 61 from Sri Brahma Samhita. Nice, very important purport. Very important discussion. And that, again, highlight, it's after Brahma's realization. For us, it's not when we have such mature realization. It's just, it's a principle that applies in the mature stage that Brahma was in, or the not yet mature stage that we're in. Same principle applies. Now, the two references that I want to make in the first canto Bhagavatam, they're both from chapter 8. One is text 41, where it's in Queen Kunti's prayers, and the other is text 47, where it's the conclusion of this chapter of Queen Kunti's prayers. Her prayers have ended, and what's being described is what happened after Kunti finished her prayers. So, the topic here is how to spiritualize the material portion of our worldly affection. The word that's repeated in those two verses is sneha. Anybody hear of the name Sneha? I know some Snehas. Sneha means affection. But specifically, the prakriti word is used here, so it's the material affection. And material affection covers our spiritual consciousness. So to balance, just like Bhaktisiddhanta was speaking about the social needs, you know, marriage, it's material. And the occupation that goes to maintain your household, that's material. But how do you balance? You spiritualize. You make Krishna at the center, thought of Krishna and do for Krishna at the center. So in Queen Kunti's prayers, I'll read the verse. You know, you all know this verse. O Lord of the universe, O soul of the universe, O personality of the form of the universe, please, therefore, sever my tie of affection for my kinsmen, the Pandavas and the Vrishnis, which sounds like very cold, you know. Queen Kunti is saying, you know, get rid of my family members. She's not saying that. She's saying that there's a material portion to my affection for my family members. And this is Queen Kunti, what to speak of us, so when discussing this verse, Prabhupada explains, a woman has two families that she feels affection for, the family that she was born in, her father's family, and her own children, that family. So, he doesn't say that men don't, he just speaks about women because this is Kunti. So she has this affection. And the scene is, Krishna is about to leave. So he's in Hastinapur. He's come to Hastinapur to give support and give service, give his protection to the Pandavas, who are Kunti's sons. So now that the Pandavas are well situated, Krishna is going back to Dwaraka, where Kunti's brother, Vasudev, and the rest of the Yadu dynasty are. And so Krishna will be with her father's family, but be away from her children's family, and when he's with his children's family, he's away from her father's family. So, you know, it's a win-lose situation. Where's the win-win situation? The win-win situation is, although I feel affection for both families, when you're here, they're losing, when you're there, we're losing, when you're here, they're losing, so the solution is take away the material portion of my affection, leaving only the spiritual portion of affection. Sneha pasham idam chindi kat vidham pandashu vrishnishu. And when she finishes her prayers, Krishna just smiles. And he's prepared to go. He accepts her prayers, but without describing his response, he prepares himself to leave. But just at that time, Yudhisthira comes before Krishna and implored Krishna lovingly, please remain. Then Yudhisthira is grieving. King Yudhisthira, who was much aggrieved, could not be convinced, despite instructions by great sages headed by Vyas and Lord Krishna himself, the performer of superhuman feats, despite all historical evidence. Then, again, affection. Sneha. King Yudhisthira, the son of Dharma, overwhelmed by the death of his friends, was aggrieved, just like a common materialistic man. O sages, thus deluded by affection, he began to speak. So the Sanskrit is prakritenatmana vipra sneha moha vasham kataha. He was carried away by this material affection based upon the body. So how do we spiritualize affection? In one sense, one can say that affection deludes even a great soul. Affection here is deluding Maharaj Yudhisthira. So what to speak of us? So is the message make affection zero? No. But we have to be very careful how we repose affection. To spiritualize affection. And that's one of the social needs of every living being. We all need, we want and we need to feel loved and to love others. But how to properly repose that? How to make this balance of spiritual and material? You spiritualize the material by doing it properly. I've been listening to one lecture five times. It's just that Prabhupada spoke. It's so wonderful. He gave like 10 examples of how affection, when improperly placed, like simply attached to the temporary, it deludes even a very fortunate person. He gives the example of Chaitanya Charitamrita, the fisherman, who, when Lord Chaitanya, in a state of total spiritual ecstasy, went running for the ocean and thinking it was the Jamuna River and plunged his body into the ocean and was just floating. And at night, the fisherman was pulling in his net and he thought it was a big fish, and so said it was a big fish, it was Lord Chaitanya. And when he touched the body of Lord Chaitanya, he went mad in ecstatic devotion. Only he wasn't learned enough to know what ecstatic devotion was. He thought he just went mad. He thought this was a ghost. And he contacted a ghost and became spooked. And so when they found the fisherman walking along the water, deranged, Srupa Damodar could immediately understand he must have contacted Lord Chaitanya. And he was pleading, "I take me to an exorcist." And Srupa Damodar said, "I'm a very expert exorcist. Tell me the problem." "I was fishing and I was bringing in my net and I touched this ghost and I've gone mad, and how will I maintain my wife and children in this mad state? I have to find an exorcist." Although he was, by the mercy of Lord Chaitanya, in ecstasy, he didn't recognize ecstasy because he was attached to maintaining his wife and children. Prabhupada's comment, this is the situation. So, while love stories and even, you know, philanthropy and things that where people are doing acts of kindness for others and their loved ones, from a spiritual perspective, if it's improperly directed, it serves to cover one's consciousness, as the verse is describing about Maharaj Yudhisthira. This is maybe not just 102, it's probably 201. How to properly balance, because how to spiritualize affection takes very clear understanding and strong Krishna consciousness. Prabhupada gave several other little stories. He was describing when he was once in Kanpur. He was in a house that outside there was a big monkey, a mother monkey with a little baby monkey, and they were looking through the bars to steal something. And then the little baby monkey barely fit through the bars in the window and fell into his room. And Prabhupada described that the mother monkey at once went practically mad, trying to pull apart the bars of the window, and of course the bars of the window wouldn't move, and she was frantic because her little baby monkey was no longer clinging to her. So Prabhupada said he managed to somehow get the little baby monkey back out the window and to the bars, and the mother monkey was okay then. So that's in all species of life, insects and birds, and in Jai Gosundar's backyard there were four deer that kind of hang out back in his neighborhood. There's a state park back there, and you know, they're always alert to who's coming. The mother and father, and because the two little ones have little antlers, the two mother and father have big antlers. I guess that's how you tell the difference. But they travel together, and they're kind of looking out for each other. So it's all species of life do like that. So how to, and that material affection covers consciousness. Then Prabhupada told another story. There was one young boy who was being raised by his aunt. And his aunt had very much affection for this young boy. So much affection she overlooked his faults. And so, in course of time, he through bad association, he started stealing. And rather than correcting him out of affection, she just spoke lightly about it. Oh, isn't this amazing? Without even making effort, without working hard, you're acquiring so many things. Very nice business, and ha ha ha, and just no correction. So after some time, he became a big-time thief, and in the course of thieving, he was confronted, and there was a murder, and he was convicted of murder, and he was sentenced to death. And the police guards in the jail said, "What is your last departing wish before your death sentence comes?" And he said, "I want to speak with my aunt." Some of you have heard the story. So the aunt comes to the jail, and she's crying and crying, and he says, "Come closer, come closer." And puts her ear right to the bars, and he bites her ear. Oh! Starts crying. And said, because you're lamenting now, but when I was young, if you could have corrected me from this bad behavior, neither of us would be in this situation, so now you have to suffer as I have to suffer for that misplaced affection." Then he told another story. When he was a householder, he saw in the courtyard across the way, on the other side of the wall between his house and the next house, one woman was beating her child, severely beating her child. And so Prabhupada said, "I asked my servant, why is she beating her child?" And the servant said, "Because she gave his older brother, who had typhoid, a kachori, or paratha, or something." So the whole explanation is, when you have typhoid, you're not supposed to take any solid food. It's strictly forbidden. So the older brother, not knowing that that was going to aggravate his disease, asked his younger brother, "Steal one paratha for me, because I'm very hungry." So out of affection, he did like that, and aggravated the disease terribly. And when the mother found out what was the cause, she went to the younger child and beat him and beat him and beat him. Prabhupada's point was the misplaced affection of having a good intention, but misplaced. So, the act of being charitable is good. It's a demonstration of good character. But supposing that not being properly guided, that charity is not given to a qualified Brahmana or a Vaishnava, but to a drunkard, Prabhupada's statement was, then he'll incur sin and may go to hell. Although his intention was a good act. I had this experience when I was a small boy. Some of you have heard this before, but where I grew up in upstate New York, and in cycles, like every 6 years or 7 years or something, they had infestation of locusts. You know, like wings and about that big, and they just like go in droves, and they're like thick like a cloud, and they come in and land and they eat up everything. All the trees, all the crops, all the grass, whatever it is, it's, you can hear them chomping, 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 and then they go to the next place and devour that. I don't know the science of it, but they come every 6 or 7 years. So one year when I was about her age, it was that time when the locusts had come. So my mother gave me some black flag to spray in our garage, because the garage was filled with locusts. So I was spraying the black flag in the garage, and I saw a little cat, and there were some locusts on the cat, and I sprayed the cat thinking, protect the cat from all the locusts. And the next morning when we got up, the cat was dead in the garage, because she licked her body and it was black flag and she was dead. So I had a realization that good intention is not good enough. Or affection that's misplaced in what's being described here can cover what's in the real interest of the individual and other individuals and ultimately our Krishna consciousness. So how to spiritualize or how to balance what we may see as material affection, but it can, which can easily delude us. It's not affection is bad, but as Queen Kunti is praying, to remove the material portion of her affection so that the affection is just on the spiritual side. And then lots of affection. So the idea of devotional practice is to bring our affection to Krishna, thereby reducing the material portion of our affection, and then it can spiritualize our affection, and things that don't have a spiritual basis or a Krishna conscious basis, they just fall away. They become less and less and less significant and fade. Gone. Therefore, we have our stages of devotion, and one should not imitate an advanced stage of devotion, but one should recognize what are the symptoms of advancement, just like another question is there, how can we gauge how well we're doing on this trajectory of developing our loving relationship with Krishna? So this is one of those gauges, and that is, that the affection that, just like Bhaktisiddhanta's language, you just naturally have on the body, mind, and social. The material portion, to the degree the material portion of that affection is gone, then there'll be spiritual, that is, not based upon the body or based upon circumstance. We can be situated in unconditional loving relationships with others, based upon an unconditional loving relationship with Krishna, that even in provoking circumstances, our affection doesn't change. Because if it's spiritual, if it's truly Krishna-centered. And in that state, then Krishna can do with us what he likes. He can embrace us. He can neglect us. He can trample us under his feet. He can do whatever he likes. It doesn't change our disposition to him. As long as we can be engaged in his service in some fashion. So the attachment goes to the position of serving Krishna. Now this end of chapter 8 situation where even Vyasadeva, even Krishna, the performer of superhuman acts, specifically as described, can't convince Maharaj Yudhisthira to give up his sneha, material portion. And all of that is because what Krishna wants to do is he wants to bring in Grandfather Bhishma and glorify Grandfather Bhishma. Because where is Grandfather Bhishma getting his ability to pacify Maharaj Yudhisthira? From Krishna. But Krishna shows, I can't do it, Bhishma, you should do it. You're a better man than me. He just wants to glorify Grandfather Bhishma. In case there's any doubt about the qualification of Grandfather Bhishma, let there be no doubt. Just see how great it is. This is Krishna. Removing this affection, so material affection portion. So Krishna is that remover. Therefore he's Krishna. He's all attractive. If we can become attracted to Krishna, who is all attractive, then whatever attraction we may have to lesser things, that fades. This is how we balance our material and spiritual portions of our life, is by spiritualizing everything. Then it's not a question of this or that, it's a question of what is most pleasing to Krishna. And we make our decisions on that basis. So we're not so advanced presently to know what is pleasing to Krishna, and so we perform vidhi, sadhana, bhakti. Because we know these things I should do. They're good for me. They're prescribed in the Vedas. Our founder Acharya, Srila Prabhupada, has given these basic things to do. He's a good physician. His medicine is very expert. His diagnosis is also, let me take the medicine. Even my hand may hurt. Where's our... Or my mouth may hurt when I'm chanting for half a round. Oh, I'll do it anyway because it's good for me. Your sons. But as we become more advanced, it doesn't hurt. It's actually very nice. And then our life becomes spiritualized fully. Gradually. So there's some further thoughts on our topic from yesterday evening. And we'll see if we have a nice lively discussion like we did last night. Any comments, questions?
Russia, the correction with affinity, material affinity portion, I understood that. And is there a chance, like, in the intention of correction, Our correction becomes punishment.
Can you explain? It sounded very profound, but I couldn't capture it.
I'm trying to correct my son.
Ah, your son. Not yourself. Okay. Let's ask your son. Go ahead. I'm trying to correct my son. Then?
I give the correct message, but I'm affected by the way of the delivery.
In what way are you affected by the way of delivery?
I become so angry.
That's not good.
I don't talk to him.
That's not good. And so what's your question?
So will the correction take effect?
Will the correction take effect? Well, I think the correction should start inside and not outside. That's the best. Okay. That was pretty easy. Now, none of us are perfect. And so, you can't not do anything because we're not perfect. We have to act. So we try to act with sincerity, knowing that we're less than perfect. And similarly, when we receive correction, we're not perfect, and the others may not be perfect, but they're extending themselves in a way that has a good, sincere intention. So as you would hope that your son would accept your intention, although you're not perfect, you similarly should receive some, if it's coming, mercy in the form of correction, although it may not be perfectly delivered in a state of pure Krishna consciousness. Try to get the message of what needs to be corrected and accept that. And same when delivering. You've accepted the responsibility of parent, so now you have to deliver. You can't put your son on hold, say, you know, stop growing, I'll come back in 2 years when I'm more advanced in Krishna consciousness, and then we'll start interacting again. You can't do that. Not even for a minute, you can't do it. So, your question was, will it act? To a degree, but it very much depends upon the nature of the loving exchange, not just the words itself or the correction itself.
And the correction is no problem, and it is actually, it's kind of sweet because I'm getting the love there, but the mood of that anger, or you did this, that prevails for a long time. Why am I getting that?
No good. That then means you're controlled by the modes of nature. And as one who's controlled by the modes of nature is a very blunt instrument in the hands of Krishna, to rise above the modes of nature. And here's a good one. Try to correct your son in a mood or manner that you would like to be corrected if you had done that wrong thing. Think, you know, you're 2.5 feet tall and you're looking up at your father and you've just done something and you know it's not right, and how would you like to be dealt with? So then do that. Then you're not controlled anymore. The modes of nature aren't acting. You're choosing to act in a way that would be effective but satisfying at the same time. That's it. Stay with that one for a while. Okay. Something else? Yes. Hare Krishna.
Sure.
Let's start with Queen Kunti because that was one of the examples. What Kunti is asking for is where Krishna, let Krishna be at the center. Now, she's not ordinary. She's an extremely elevated soul. She's Krishna's aunt. So she's the mother of the Pandavas. She's the mother of Arjuna, who's the eternal associate. They're all the eternal associates of Krishna. She's their mother. She's up there. But she's feeling, so the material mix is, the center on Krishna is lost. And so I'm torn between the feelings of my family and my children, my parents and my children. I'm torn between those two affections. And they're pure devotees and her children are pure devotees too. But still there's some material affection, so she's torn between them. But Prabhupada referred to this verse, Brahmabhuta prasanatma na sochati na kangsati samaksarveshu bhuteshu madbhaktim labhate param. Are you familiar with that verse? You can follow the Sanskrit. Brahmabhuta. Brahmabhuta is on the platform of liberation, on the Brahman platform. The next word is prasanatma. So a symptom of spiritual affection is the happiness is within, on the platform of the soul. And when one is finding happiness in the platform of the soul, na sochati, na kangsati, there's neither hankering nor lamenting. I like this, I don't like that. They treated me nicely, they didn't treat me very nicely. Why did they neglect me like that? Why did they speak that way? Oh, they're very nice, they speak very nicely to me, and my happiness and distress is based upon duality. But for a person on the Brahman platform, on the platform of no material affinity, or no material portion of affection, samak sarveshu bhuteshu. You see, all living entities sum up equally. The other day I was giving this example of King Ranti Dev, and he was on the platform, he was a very advanced soul, where he didn't see my family. He saw all living entities. So much so that this is ninth canto Bhagavatam, but he had undergone a 48-day fast of no food and no water. He was hungry. And he was thirsty. But when he sat down to break his fast, when Brahman came, and immediately got off his throne, where he was about to eat, and gave the throne to the Brahman, washed his feet and offered him, please take. We have this wonderful meal prepared just for you. And the Brahmana ate. And it was half gone. Because then, just as he was ready to break the fast with the remaining half, one village man came with his dogs and said, my dear king, my dogs are hungry. Could I have some charity for my dogs? Yes, yes, you can take. Take what's left. Because he was on that platform, seeing spirit soul. Weren't saying, no, my children, my family, and my body's hungry. He was hungry. But it was affection on the spiritual platform. And then there was a glass of water left, so he went to drink the water before, just as he was drinking the water, when mendicant came, I'm very thirsty, can I have some water? the Bhagavatam describes, he then offered prayers to the Supreme Personality of Godhead. How fortunate I am that you are giving me opportunities to serve your part and parcel living as you see on the spiritual platform. Feeding them because they're thirsty and they're hungry was his happiness, although he was hungry too, because he was very charitably disposed. And then they disclosed, after those beautiful prayers, it was actually Lord Shiva, Lord Brahma, and Lord Indra who had come in that disguised form just to examine whether he was attached, because they had heard he was very charitable and very elevated soul. So his affection was on the spiritual platform. That's extraordinary. Not how any ordinary person would behave. So you're asking for some examples of spiritual affection. For one doesn't have consideration of one's own well-being. Like the gopis, when they heard Krishna had a headache. You know that? Neela, yes? No? Krishna had a headache. Krishna doesn't have a headache. But Krishna had a headache. It was a leela. Krishna, oh, I've got a headache. So what can cure your headache? I have to have dust from somebody's feet. Get some dust from somebody's feet, quick. Oh, I've got a headache. No one would give their dust from their feet because to put their dust from their feet on Krishna's head? But an offense. I'll go to hell. No. But when they went to the gopis, immediately, quick. But don't you realize what will happen? What will be the consequence? Never mind. Krishna has a headache. The verse ends, Mad Bhaktim Labhate Param. And one at once comes to the spiritual platform of devotional service, pure devotional service. When there's no consideration of self-interest, just service to Krishna, whatever that means. Here's another example which Prabhupada gave in this lecture. It was Arjuna, because of his affection for his cousins and his teacher and his grandfather and all those circumstances, he wasn't prepared to fight. But when he understood that was because of his material affection, but we understood this is what Krishna wants, he was prepared to act because it's what Krishna wants. It's saying that's a ruling principle for those who are elevated in spiritual life. Whether it's society, friendship, family. What does Krishna want? And then it spiritualizes the affection. Just like another example is when we were taking part in that festival of the Holy Name. There was one person that came from St. Louis who had never been with devotees before. He was a co-worker of one devotee who works at AT&T, that office downtown St. Louis. And he came up to me afterwards. Now, this isn't on the same platform of these elevated devotees, but he said, I had a very wonderful experience. He said, My friends invited me, it was 4th of July, said, let's go to the beach. That's what Americans do, you go to the beach. And then my other friend said, no, why don't you come with me to the Festival of the Holy Name? I said, that sounds very interesting, Festival of the Holy Name. I've been to the beach before, but I've never been to the Festival of the Holy Name. So that, in other words, just curiosity. That was it, just curiosity. Sure, let's go there. Instead of the beach. And when I got there, I experienced such loving relationships with all the devotees from so many different backgrounds and ages and ethnic and American and Indian, and just like, just, it was so strong. The feeling of loving relationships. I thought, wow, Festival of the Holy Name sounds good. And I never had beads in my hand, and you started talking about this, you know, 32 rounds thing. I didn't even know how to hold them. So my friend showed me how to hold them, and I was just so moved by the mood here. I chanted 26 rounds. First time. So, you know, being moved by a spiritual principle takes one beyond the limitations of material attraction. That's sneha. So it's become spiritualized. He felt very strongly bonded. I heard in the car ride going back, he couldn't stop talking about what a wonderful experience. I can say, I feel more identity with the association of devotees than the family that I was born in. My brother and sisters are all forever inviting me, please come and visit us. And, you know, I always have too many things to do, like spend time with the devotees. My older brother lives just, you know, somewhere near Richmond, Virginia. I'm going to be in Virginia. He doesn't know I'm in Virginia. Sometimes my one sister is from California. She lives in Monterey, Carmel Valley, that area. She came to see me once in San Jose. You know, she had to come see me with the devotees. It's just because I feel stronger identity with the devotees. That's spiritual affection. Not because the body is connected to that body, but Krishna is at the center. Okay? Yeah. Hare Krishna.
On the same lines, would ask a question. While we are practicing devotion, we sometimes understand this principle that this current body and the relationship that we have with our family members is a temporary circumstance in the bigger scheme of things.
It is definitely a temporary circumstance in the bigger scheme of things, but...
at the same time. We also, as you said so nicely, we develop very good relationships with so many devotees.
Well, that's also temporary, right?
In the mode of devotion. It might be lasting, as Krishna wants.
Well, on the beyond this, like, I'll let you finish your question, but Prabhupada was once asked, is there an ISKCON in the spiritual world? And Prabhupada said, not exactly like we do here. But we'll have each other's association in the spiritual world. So it's eternal. It's those spiritual relationships are spiritual.
At times it so happens that within our own family there are people who are spiritual. Different degrees, but are spiritual. And then we have association of devotees who are different degrees of spiritual. Sometimes in the lives of our family members and practicing devotees, let us assume one circumstance of maybe there's a severe shortage of funds. Maybe in the life of one of our close relatives who's also got fearing like that. And it's also there in maybe like one of the congregation members with whom we are closely, we're friends with that person. So then, the person who's a relative, they kind of...
they have their expectation.
Yeah. And they also feel that we are devotees as well, since we have good character, and we are also relatives. The other person is a congregation member. So how do you really not let this particular word be the deciding factor? How should a person approach such a...
By Krishna consciousness.
we suppose the funds are limited.
I got it. By Krishna, how do you? Your question was, how do you not become unduly influenced by the bodily relation? The answer is by Krishna consciousness. And you said, well, funds may be limited. All our resources are limited. Our time is limited. Our energy is limited. So, neither should there be aversion, nor should there be attachment. Or say it the other way, neither should there be attachment, nor should there be aversion. So, the criterion should be Krishna. And what's going to be pleasing to Krishna. Like, I didn't know this, but Hari Sori shared this with me. It's not a well-known fact, but out of concern for his family, Prabhupada made arrangements from time to time that his family, his former family, would have some money. And it was not out of attachment, but it was out of, and in fact, it wasn't something that he let it be known because it might not be understood, might be understood as attachment, but it was a duty, not out of attachment. But he would sometimes make some arrangements for some family members. There's a nice example, an acharya example. So our consideration should be what's pleasing to Krishna. And there are levels of service. Like the question yesterday about worship of deity at home and worship of deity in the temple. It's Krishna and Krishna, or Gornitai and Gornitai, or something. So, there's Krishna in the heart of our family members. But, to what degree are they Krishna conscious? And to what degree are... So, we may help a congregation member who's not necessarily particularly, like, you know, mega Krishna conscious, because we have some concern for them as a devotee of the Lord and our family. So we try to make our concern for our family members on that basis also, as devotees of the Lord. We're part and parcel living entities of the Lord. And therefore we do something. At the same time, we may make, with our limited resource, we may choose to make a substantial donation at the temple that's not, you know, at the same level as the donation we may give to a family member. But, you know, we're doing our various duties, trying to see that it's for Krishna, and that Krishna should be pleased. And in the course of, so, like Bhakti Siddhanta's point here, there are duties of this world that we do because they're duties, and we do them, and they're our duties. We can't be ruled by the bodily connection and the expectations that others have for us, whatever their reasons may be. Like I used to get, they stopped sending them to me finally, but I used to get these class reunion notices. You get them too?
Yeah.
Oh, okay. And, you know, I have no interest to go to a class reunion. But, you know, they have some expectation. Oh. And sometimes people would call. They called the temple. And I have to go take the, you know, can you come to the class reunion? Oh, I've got a Rath Yatra that weekend. Or something. Now I travel so much they can't find me. our lives cannot be simply fulfilling the expectations of others because they expect something of us because we're part of their family or we went to school together or we hung out together or something like that. We should look to the eternal. And in the realm of the eternal, there are worldly duties that we take up in a proper consciousness in a proper way with the limited resource of time and wealth and energy that we have. Trying all the time to think how Krishna would be pleased with how I'm using my time and energy and resource. Ramya. To expect something from others.
Yes,
really?
Subtle stuff?
Yeah,
like compliments or praises or something like that.
Hmm.
So,
you mean you're human?
So, in those, like, situations, like, how do I cultivate the consciousness, like, not to expect it?
Be transcendental. By, to the degree that we're attached to Krishna, we'll be detached from those things. Conversely, to the degree we're not fully attached to Krishna, those things will be there. And you're being very honest. At the same time, it's embarrassing that those things are there. But they're not us. It's not our nature to want that type of thing. It's our nature to have attraction for Krishna. So, attachment for Krishna needs to replace the attachment to the worldly sense of what happiness is. There's grosser things of what people may want for happiness, and there's subtler things of what people, but the gross or subtle will only, will get relief from when we make Krishna our master and just want to serve him. Then it's perfectly okay. Because the other thing can be a problem too. Supposing there's a whole bunch of praise. And then what happens? You get puffed up. And then when pride can make one really bad. Like, you know, besides forgetting Krishna, just kind of like mean-spirited. Narada Muni speaks like this. It can make one cruel. Pride. So, we don't want that. Better that they don't praise me. But a higher platform is whether they, this or that. I just want to please Krishna. So we have to strive to come to that platform. And we can best come to that platform by associating with those who are on that platform and try to serve them and hear from them and imbibe their qualities just by hanging out with them, by being with them in a nice way. And chanting the holy name. Yes. Okay.
So having known that, so if a lot of services come up and if I feel limited due to material considerations, then I tend to go in a sense of guilty feeling that, you know, I'm not receiving it properly. So how do you deal with
this? This is a complicated question. It's very circumstantial. Like, you may be with a full amount of service. Part of the service that I have is helping people learn to say no. And some people you have to teach them to say yes instead of no. But some persons just say yes, 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 and they burn out. So to understand what your limits are, what your capacity is, and that you do quality devotional practice so that your service is also quality. Sufficient time with Prabhupada's book, sufficient time with quality chanting, and so on. And so there's a proper balance, which is our topic. Balancing these things. But if the guilty feeling shouldn't rule you either. You know, if there's a good reason to say thank you but no thank you, then be peaceful. But if you should be saying yes, thank you, then do that. But what's guilt going to do? Take you down. Your enthusiasm will diminish. So take proper appraisal of what your limitations are, your eagerness to serve. It's nice to serve, nice to expand service, provided your core activities are nicely in place. Anything else? Yes. We're going back to Manoj's question?
Yes, sorry.
Getting angry at your son? You don't even have one.
I mean, it's not that relationship. It's another relationship.
Okay.
So
you get angry at some other relative. Your wife.
It's not. Maharaj, my question is that certain events happen and there is a theoretical understanding that, you know, essentially the problem lies within myself and it's not out there.
That's right.
My question is that even though that knowledge is there, when we are going through that whole thing, there is churning going on in the heart, and unless the heart is open.
Vacho vegam manasa krodha vegam. So krodha vegam can be ruling. Krodha vegam can be ruling. Yeah? Yeah. That's your question. So that's the circumstance. You're saying, although you know better, sometimes that's what's happening. Now the question is what? What to do?
Part of my question is that the theoretical knowledge, how to bring that into application so that...
By Krishna consciousness. And that means by the hearing process and submission in that hearing process and being very attentive, and you practice. And practice and practice and practice and practice and understand that because Krishna consciousness is innate, like walking is innate within a small child, by practice and practice the walking comes out. Practice and transcendental consciousness comes out. And then you no longer have to crawl. You can walk. You can act not in a reactive way, but you can act in a Krishna conscious way. Practice. Here, in the right frame of mind, right attentiveness, and then apply it. You had some question?
We have to accept that we are staying in the material world.
We are in the material world, I noticed.
Whenever we got any problem or something in family life, my personal experience that the first who came for the help are the modern relatives or the neighbors.
Okay.
So the thing is that means, and other side, he doesn't want to associate that much with them and that.
Well, your voice went down. On the other hand, what?
We doesn't want to associate that much with them.
Okay, we don't want to associate unnecessarily with.
So, what to do, Maharaj?
What to do?
And we have to accept that help or service.
It's ideal, and everyone should hear this carefully. It's ideal when the Sangha of Vaishnavas is like family. That is, there's an illness, and there's 10 people there to help the person take care of the cleaning of the house and the cooking and the thising and the datting. And it's heart melting. It's really, really an important part of, the social dimension of loving relationships in Krishna consciousness. Or like this other example you gave, financial. Someone has a problem. Like when I was in Seattle, on Monday morning at 7 a.m., somebody got a call from their company. We're laying off 1,000 workers, and guess what? You're one of them. You don't have to come to work today. And immediately, you know, there were five devotees at their home, at his home, helping to figure out, you know, let's go through your resume, in my company, they got a job application. This is immediately. It wasn't because someone was twisting their arm, it's because they want to help. And what he said is, I think I could use a break for a week. Let me just do it next week. Do it over the weekend, and I'll start making my applications after. So, you know, but they were right there. Or somebody had to go to the hospital. So they got their children, and their husband has to, so some women went to their home and took care of the kids and got them off to school and went to the hospital to be with a woman who was in the hospital. And guess how she felt? This is my family. People care about me. So our relationship should be like that. The higher, I mean, not just in those circumstances, but higher as we give Krishna consciousness to one another in our exchanges with one another. Loving relationships amongst the devotees is such an important dimension of growing in spiritual life. Being, that means receiving sometimes and giving sometimes. Whether they express great gratitude or not. This was for you, Brahma. Not because I'm looking for some pat on the back or some, you know, something. But naturally it will be there. And if for some reason it's not there, that's okay. You know, someone may be troubled by their circumstance, that's okay. It's okay. Okay? Yes. How to discipline children. This is a hot topic, huh? Look at this.
Affection only, there is this expectation, and out of the expectation, all other things arises.
Yeah. Yeah. You got the number. You heard the class. And the answer is to spiritualize that affection. You know, one of the ways that you can help check yourself is treat your children with respect and dignity, like you would if you were in their situation. And then you explain. Let's go through this situation. By there was something that you were supposed to be doing and you didn't do it, and what happened? What was the effect? What was the consequence of that? So and so felt very disappointed, and something was very important to happen connected to what you were supposed to do didn't happen. So, you know, you go through explaining rather than scolding, so that, you know, look, try to look at the situation from the same side of the table as here's what's out there, and this is what happened or didn't happen, and look at the consequences. How could it have been done differently? It would have been much better, right? So that, in other words, several other words. If you want somebody to rebel, then push them. If you want someone to be mature, then treat them maturely. Supposing you weren't doing something that wasn't the best, and somebody just pushed you. You wouldn't want to be treated like that. You'd like to be treated differently. So, the net result I'm not connecting well with saying this in the proper way. I'm thinking of three different things at the same time, and they're not sort of separating. One is treat with dignity and respect, and that's what you're going to get as the product of how your children will behave. Another is teach them why they should behave in a certain way so that they can choose that good behavior rather than because you got a stick in your hand, they'll behave nicely. When you're not there, it's party time. And the third thing is, especially with teenagers, Prabhupada's instruction is, you must treat them like a friend. When they're younger, you're the adult, and they're the child, and when they're teenage, you treat them like a friend. You sit down and discuss openly, like a friend talks to a friend. Now you're the older friend, but it's not, I'm big and you're small. Teenage life doesn't respond well to that, rebels to that kind of behavior, or that kind of treatment. Still, you're the superior, you're the adult, you're the mother, but you're speaking. I watched when Jai Gaurisundar was picking me up at the airport in Baltimore, I watched one mother interacting with her teenage child in an amazing way. She was like supermom. She sat down on the carousel and just hung out with him and just was asking, how was your trip to the Grand Canyon? What did you see and what was it like? And just like she was a friend. And he brought some gifts for his dad, and she, oh, look at that. He's going to really, what else happened? How was the campfire and how the camping and lots of mosquitoes and just, but she was just relating in a very friendly way. And he was really relaxed. It was a quiet type of kid, but, it was a very nice exchange. Very, very ideal. I was about to tell her, you can be my mom anytime. You're great. How would you influence a friend if your friend needed some kind of understanding and do that with your teenage children? Because that's going to be effective and the other isn't. Okay?
Can you
repeat the last prophecy? Yeah. Treat your teenage children like you would treat a friend. If your friend, there was some friend that you felt was something they needed to hear, you wouldn't be, I'm big, you're small, you better listen to me because I'm big. And you're small. You're not going to do that with a friend. Don't do that with your teenager. As you would with a friend, think like that, because that's Prabhupada's instruction. You're the older friend, the senior friend of the two, but not talked down to and command. Anyone else? Yes.
I have an application question about what we discussed in the class. So,
okay.
Like, we talked about two things, maybe, that we tried to do this by Krishna consciousness, and also we discussed about how we balance the spiritual and the material relationship. So, my concern is that, how can we avoid being mental about it?
By being Krishna conscious about it. How do you avoid being mental about making this balance?
Yeah.
Well, we have standards. There has to be some. You can't, make your mind go to sleep. So the mind is going to be there. The mind should be directed by example of our acharyas, by the teachings of our acharyas, by the guidance of those who are helping us in spiritual life. We still have to, so we can't turn our mind off. We direct the mind with those, with the intelligence. We're going to weigh things. The mind's function is accepting and rejecting. We accept those things that are, we're guided to accept as best we can. We have to make some evaluation. What's my limitation? Just like some of these topics here. And like our discussion last night, making some steps forward in increments. That's just a principle. So I may feel, wow, 16 rounds, and I'm a new person. And I can't maintain 16 rounds after some time, so I feel discouraged. I can't maintain 16 rounds. So a rule is, go in steps. So if someone's guiding an individual, they hear their Bhakti Friction member saying, wow, zowie, what should I do next? Your advice is, go in steps. And then we can avoid getting mental. We stay under the protection of good guidance. And then the person who's giving guidance has to be able to offer good guidance and themselves balanced and understand not too much, not too little. So their intelligence is guiding us. And we should always be in that situation. How do we go forward further in our Krishna consciousness? Any question over there? You have such nice questions.
Thank you.
Showstopper questions. You got one tonight?
No.
Okay. Okay. Okay, thank you very much. Srila Prabhupada ki
jai.
His Holiness Srila Prabhupada
ki jai.